Hello, you're listening to More or Less from the BBC World Service. We're your weekly guide to the numbers in the news and in life. And I'm Tim Harford. India's epic six-week election is into the final straight. But what kind of country will the next government be leading? India recently became the country with the largest population in the world. And over the decades, Indians have experienced huge changes, from everything from access to clean water to the number of children born per woman. But keeping track of these changes can be difficult in India, where it's hard for people to see public data in an accessible format. Well, Rukmini S., a data communicator based in Chennai, has an answer. She's founded Data for India, a website that makes basic socioeconomic public data easier to find and easier to understand. Welcome back to More or Less, Rukmini. The first thing, when I think of India, for a long time, we were used to talking about China as the world's most populous country, but that's no longer true. India is the most populous country in the world. So tell us about the trends behind India's population.
A lot of the conversation around India, including in India, has been driven by the size of the population, and that this, you know, tipping point occurred sometime roughly last year, where India overtook China to become the world's most populous country. But from a sort of zoomed out perspective, the story of population in India really is one of the slowing down of population growth. And this has been happening for quite some time now, but has gone largely unremarked upon, including in India. So from the early 2000s, for example, the absolute number of children born every year in India began to decline, which is a pretty strong sort of indicator of what's likely to come, a slowing down of the population, and over time, a stabilization and even a decline, which the UN estimates will happen sometime around 2060. One of the processes that is driving this decline in population is a sort of stunning decline in fertility, in the number of children that a woman is expected to have in her lifetime. And parts of urban India in particular now have fertility rates that are comparable with Japan, with Norway, with France, with the UK. I think the conversation India really needs to be having is about a slowing down in fertility and of aging, conversations that are actually quite similar to those the UK is having.
Now, Prime Minister Narendra Modi is standing for re-election and presents himself as the champion of development in India. But to what extent can he take credit for the trends in development?
It does help to look at this as a longer trajectory that in some ways goes past which government alone is in power. So I think water is one great example of that, that India has gone from having roughly 7 out of 10 people with access to water in the 80s and early 90s to now to well over 9 out of 10 people. So nearly 100% of Indians having access to drinking water.
Now, you might hear 70 to 90 or 95% and think that sounds reasonably good over 40 years. But when you flip that and consider how many people did not have clean water, almost a third, in a population the size of India, it's a huge amount of progress. But Rukmini told me there's another side to the story. Progress on piping water into homes has not gone as well as hoped. And this means people, often women, are not freed up from the work of collecting the water. Then in some places, people are relying on bottled water, which is expensive and inefficient. So the progress is patchy. But what about other areas of development? Disease, for example.
For a long time now, with good reason, the notion has been of a country where infectious diseases, diseases that are borne by either through water or through vectors like mosquito-borne diseases like malaria, really dominated the mortality conversation. This also meant that infant mortality was particularly high because these diseases really dominated infant mortality in particular. And what we've seen in India again is a really sort of stunning shift in just how high the risks of dying in infancy are. Infant mortality has declined substantially in the last 2 decades in particular. So what we're seeing now in India is that the majority of deaths now happen from non-communicable diseases, things like heart disease or diabetes-related illnesses or cancers, similar to parts of the Western world. rather than from communicable diseases as they did, say, one generation ago.
Now, you've emphasized that these improvements in development are more than just the story of a single government. I am curious as to whether this is the kind of thing that's just happening because India is getting richer and the world is getting richer and better technology is available, or whether there have been specific policy choices that have paid dividends.
I think it's a combination of the two. And I do think that for the last 20 years or so, there has been a big expansion of India's welfare state and a big sort of focus on large social assistance programs. So sometimes at the level of state governments in particular, there's almost a sort of attempt to outdo each other by announcing bigger and more progressive schemes. But in some cases, we do see that India is not batting at the level that it should be given its economic progress. There are malnutrition-related indicators that have been very stubborn to move. Anemia levels are extremely high in India.
Now, you mentioned that there has been stunning progress on various development indicators, but that progress hasn't been equally shared. But I'm curious as to where the main inequality lies. Whether is this urban-rural, rich, poor, men, women? Is there some other axis on which you can say, look, this kind of person is doing very well in modern India and this kind of person is missing out?
We have a piece up on the site that looks at access to phones and internet, for example, and you see really quite stark differences in the levels of access that men and women have to phones and the internet. Similarly, I think one of the really important stories of employment in India is just how many women are not part of the paid economy.
It would be easy to assume that falling fertility rates might address this and bring about more female empowerment and education and start to address the gender disparity in access to the internet and participation in the formal labour market. For Rukmini, it's not that simple.
One of the really stunning transformations that we've seen in elections in India is female voter turnout, which now typically exceeds male voter turnout in most parts of the country. There is really cause for politicians to think about what exactly it is that women voters want and how to deliver on that count. But what that then means for economic independence and economic participation is not entirely clear, and whether one will necessarily lead to the other is also not clear. Because especially when it comes to participation in the paid economy outside the house, there is the strong role still of social norms.
That's gender, and there are other inequalities too.
Other cleavages include urban and rural. So when you look at things like access to water and sanitation in particular, you do see large urban and rural differences. The cities do much better than rural areas. And then one of the very important dimensions, particularly on demographic indicators, has been broadly between the north of the country and the south of the country, with both historical, geographical, political, other reasons leading to the fact that the southern states in India tend to be richer, more educated, better developed. And as a result, on things like fertility as well as family sizes, there are really two realities and two speeds of change and growth.
Thanks to Rukmini S., founder of Data for India. And that's all for this week. If you've seen a number we should look at, please drop us an email, moreorless@bbc.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.